Just because I'm a winemaker doesn't mean I have to be a critic all the time.
Oh, this is fun and it's beautiful. You do it because you love it. And if you don't love it unconditionally and stupidly, and you're not crazy passionate about it, you won't last.
You know, to stay out of the vineyard, I only have the shotgun for the boar, and I'm thinking, great.
Turning sugar into alcohol is not really rocket science.
You think your car depreciates quickly. Don't hold a candle to what barrels do.
A lot of people don't realize Sonoma County is 1 million acres. Makes us about the size of Rhode Island as a state.
I mean, in my youth, my first couple of vintages, the crazy part was being lucky we're alive still.
The really cool thing about wine is it swims in the stream of history and civilization and everything else.
I worked 14 hours the day before I went into labor. I was determined to get most of that Chardonnay in.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 219. This week we feature Stuart Spoto of Spoto Family Winery in Sacramento. It's a fact that many wine lovers seek out smaller wine producers, wineries that make less than 1,000 cases. In searching for those special wines, you'll never know what you'll discover. And discovery is the best part. Spoto Family Winery is one of those wineries. The winery is located in Sacramento, but the wine is from Napa. We met up with owner Stuart Spoto at the Oxbow Market in Napa during Premier Week. Take a listen to what we discovered. We're here in Napa, the city of Napa, and we're at the Oxbow Market, so it's a little bit lively, a little bit loud in the back room, but I'm here with Stuart Spoto of Spoto Family Wines. How are you doing, Stuart?
I'm doing great, and I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you, so thank you so much for having me here.
Not at all. I appreciate it, too. I'm looking at your jacket. I just glanced down at it when I was calling your name out, and I'm just looking at the little red accents, which are really nice. Is that a leaf on there?
It's a leaf on the grapes that didn't come out as well as it should.
It looks nice.
So, yeah, our original S just was a grape cluster up here and then a leaf at the bottom. So we've kind of modified it over the years, as all labels do. You modify them a little bit. But then I have four burgundy dots, and that's for one of each of the members of the family and the four generations of winemaking we've been doing. So it's kind of cool.
I like that, the whole family aspect. Well, thanks for taking the time to come in from Sacramento, because that's where your winery is located.
It is.
And yours is kind of unique, so tell me about that.
Well, let me see. How do I start this? I've had a passion for making wine for many, many years because I've made wine with my dad for over 40 years. So when the time came to start making it commercially, which, of course, that was the transition I wanted to make, It was a hard crossroads. Do I do it in Napa? Do I do it in Sacramento? Because that's where my family's at, that's where my facility's at, and that's where I've been making it for the many years previous to that. So if you look at the options and the choices, Napa obviously was, you know, you're in the heart of the wine country, but it's extremely expensive to make wine in Napa. Such that, you know, if you don't, I mean, the old adage is how do you make a small fortune in the wine industry? You start with a large fortune. And if you look at almost any winery that you can probably, you know, that you're familiar with the name, they've had a few bucks to start this thing. So for us, we wanted to just kind of keep making it on our small family scale and not have to, you know, move to Napa to do it because our family's still in Davis and Sacramento. So the key was securing the fruit source because it's all about the fruit. The wine starts in the vineyard. And as far as I'm concerned, if you don't have good fruit, you're not going to make good wine. My dad told me early on when I was probably 10 or 12 years old, he goes, Stuart, two things to good winemaking. He goes, good fruit and cleanliness. And those have been my mantra for the whole time. I mean, and securing a good fruit source was key. So I'd say about 25 years ago, we secured a parcel of land. We don't own it, but we lease a parcel of land on the Tokolone Ranch in Oakville.
And that's where I should just,
that's where I just drop my mic and walk away. Because I'll tell you what, that fruit source, we've tried half dozen other fruit sources from St. Helena to Rutherford to Yountville to Oak Knoll. We've tried different appellations. Nothing could beat, in my mind, it's my humble opinion, Oakville fruit is the best fruit source available. So bring it kind of back full circle, why we do it in Sacramento. I have the fruit. I have the fruit source, and now just making it my home seemed reasonable. It seemed like a good way to start. Well, that was 13 years ago, and it really hasn't changed much since, except for the fact we're way more involved in the Napa area. We do some barrel storage here, we do some bottling here, but the majority of our operations in Sacramento, and that's how we kind of keep our costs down and I'm able to produce wine that people enjoy.
It's smart to be able to do that, to keep your costs down. Key phrase when it comes to Napa fruit.
Yeah. My colleagues, when we do tastings, they go, "Stuart, are you still making 500 cases?" And I go, "Yeah, afraid so." And they go, "How do you make any money doing that?" And I go, "I can explain it to you, but until you come see our facility, it really doesn't make any sense." And the people that do see it, they go, "Ah, overhead. Okay, it makes sense." I mean, what we did wasn't easy either. We started the first commercial winery in a residential neighborhood in Sacramento. It took us probably a year and a half to get through all the permitting process and applications and such, but we were able to pull it off, and now we have the first and only licensed winery in Sacramento County.
That's something to be proud of.
In your home, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, one of the things we talk about a lot in this business is family. You're a family winery. There's so much family involved, and you have two girls, is that right?
I do, and both are involved. One is more so involved than the other, but from my wife, who does pretty much all the day-to-day marketing, wine club and such, to she's the only staff, really. I mean, she and I do all of the work from, you know, the crush to bottling. So it's really is a lot of work, but we get it done, and our daughters help when they can. And we have two daughters. One is 28 and one is 25. And the 28-year-old got her degree from Cal Poly San Luis Obispo in wine and viticulture. So she is a winemaker, and she has traveled the world making wine. She's made wine in Australia, South Africa, Argentina. Hopefully soon she wants to go do it in Italy and France. So, I mean, she's really good at what she does. And now I'm more excited about this. She sells barrels. So imagine the experience she's getting right now, because she's going in, her job is to go taste wine and sell barrels. So
you get paid to do that.
Get paid to do that. And it's a French company. So her first week on the job was in Cognac. So, you know, it could be worse. But the good part about this is that she's developing her palate. And that's important to me, because what we do is we make these blends, Bordeaux blends and Cabernets, that the blending is crucial. It's not just a little bit of Cabernet and this. It's months of tasting and such. So with her going out and doing these barrel sales, she's refining her palate tremendously. So that's what she's doing. And then she comes and helps me for the crush, which is good. And my youngest is a biochemist. She got a degree at UC San Diego in biochemistry and chemistry. And she does my social media. Yeah, you thought I was going to say chemistry. But
I was kind of curious about that, actually. Yeah, she'd be a urologist. No, she's social media pretty much.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, but, you know, she is good at the chemistry aspect of it. But my background is chemical engineering, so I kind of have that covered. But she does challenge me. You know, I'll never forget one day she came home from school all full of knowledge, and she said, "So, Dad, what's the compound makeup of alcohol?" And I go, it's got a couple C's, a couple H's, and a couple of O's in there. I think it's C2H5O, whatever, you know. And she goes, "Well, you missed a couple." And I go, "All right, honey, here's a glass of my Bordeaux blend. Tell me what's in it."
How'd she do?
Not very good. But, you know, she said it was good. She liked it. But, I mean, that's the point. I don't want people to know what exact proportions might want. I just want them to enjoy it. So, you know.
And it's that difference between science and emotion, the idea of making wine. There is that art to it, right? But you had said you've been making wine with your dad for 40 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, let's see. I'm kind of old right now. And so I started when I was 7 or 8 years old. And we grew up.
Oh, there's a burgeoning wine career right there at 7 or 8. I like that.
Yeah. No, I think it's older than that then. I must just. Anyway, maybe I said 40 and I keep saying that for the last 5 years. So maybe it's 45 years now. You know, I keep saying you're 29 again. So.
Yes.
Anyway, so we grew up in a ranch in Yuba City. My grandfather immigrated from Italy in early 1900s and started a fruit and nut business in Yuba City. So we had fruit on the property, grapes, and my dad wanted to make wine. So as any good Italian does, they pick the fruit and try to make wine. Well, when you're 6 or 7 or 8 years old, whatever it was at that point, it's kind of fun to watch your dad do that kind of thing and help out. And it was one of those things that I guess I got hooked right back then, because we were there for I don't know how many years after that making wine or trying to make wine, and it wasn't really very good, but it was, you know, it was rot gut Italian red, you know. So, but then we moved to Davis in the late mid 70s, and my dad's passion came back really strong, and with that he teamed up with a lot of enology students over at UC Davis. So if you're going to make wine in a, you know, in a town and you need help, we're better than UC Davis, because the staff, the students there, they knew their thing. So my dad's level and our level of winemaking went up very, very fast. So we started making some wines in the late 70s, early 80s that were phenomenal, and started entering competitions in Napa, home winemakers competitions, and did extremely well, and just making some darn good wine for many years. And in 2000, I think that's when the pivotal point where I started making it on my own in my basement and as a hobby. And then in 2003 or four, we got commercially licensed, and kind of now it's, I'd say the rest is history, but I think we're still making it or trying to make it, you know.
Well, you didn't really have much of a choice too. It was sort of, that calling is there. It's just going to drag you along with it, right?
Oh, most people, my friends are retired and, or they're starting to think about retirement. I don't ever see that. I'm going to be doing this till I told my wife, I said, you know, until the day I fall in that bin, which is kind of a bad analogy, a bad comparison, I'm going to do this until I can. I mean, until I can't do it anymore.
It's a happy way to die, by the way, for what it's worth.
Yeah, I mean, think about this. My dad is 85 years old. He comes over every week, and he'll come over at Crush, and he'll come over next Monday when I'm bottling. He'll help me. And I have photos from the last time we bottled. He loves to put the cork in the bottle. That's the job he likes to do, and I can trust him with that, because it's pretty simple. You push two buttons on a pneumatic corker, and that's about it. So, you know, at 84 and 85, my mom and dad still help when they can, and my mom's out there sorting fruit. So it's a very much so a family business. It's really fun to see my dad, my mom, myself, and my kids making wine together. You know, and it's just, it doesn't get any better than that.
Well, it's third generation, right?
Yeah.
Number one.
Yeah. Fourth is gone, unfortunately. My grandfather died, I don't know, maybe 25 years ago.
Did he have his hands in wine too back in Italy?
Oh, not in Italy, but in my dad's stuff. Yeah, he enjoyed helping.
Oh, nice.
And,
nice.
You know, I think he enjoyed more so drinking it. So.
I think many of us do. That's why some of us don't become winemakers. That way we can sit back and enjoy all your work.
Yeah.
But
thank
again,
you. That's I'm glad.
But it's true. And mm-hmm. And when you have something like this, yeah, it's a product, but it's got that family thing behind it. I think, again, this is a big family effort.
It is. And, you know, and I think that's the fun part. The hard part, you know, when you think about winemaking, you think, well, there's got to be some work involved. And, you know, I don't look at the work that's involved in making the wine as work. I mean, it's from the picking of the fruit to the bottling, yeah, I may spend 12 hours, 15 hours a day doing some of those tasks, but it's always got a glass of wine on my hand and a smile on my face, so it's like, it's exhausting work sometimes. I find the hardest work is going out and selling it. And but that to me is, I'm one of those few engineers that can sell, so I don't mind, you know, the challenge of trying to sell something. So it's, but it is harder work sometimes.
Well, you have a very positive personality. I mean, that helps it right there. And I'm sure working with your wife, that doesn't hurt at all. She's so outgoing.
She's a big personality as well, and I love it. Yeah, we've been married 34 years, so it's a good partnership.
Well, congratulations to you. That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
you were, and are you still a chemical engineer?
You know, the funny thing about that is that I received my degrees, chemical and civil engineering, from UC Davis back in the early 80s, and I've never had a job in the trade of chemical engineering.
Oh, really?
Or civil engineering. I've worked always a job where I needed to have the background, but I've never been a chemical engineer, or I never got my professional designation. I mean, my first job out of the gate, I was doing fluid mechanics for PG&E for Farmers Pump Systems. Then I worked for Hewlett Packard doing optoelectronics, which is light emitting diodes. So engineering has been the background of it, but never really an engineering job. I mean, the winemaking is more engineering, you know, chemical engineering than anything else.
Well, there's so many aspects to winemaking. Again, it's, you know, you have the retail sales end, you have the making, you have the growing. It's unlike any other business, because there's all those aspects and usually only be handled by the same people.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting about it, in the winemaking aspect of it, to have a small business like ours, when you oversee all of the operations from the picking of the fruit to the bottling to the selling. There's a lot of consistency in it, and that's, I think, what we have to offer. And you know, when people ask how my wines change from year to year, I say, well, hopefully you're going to see a common theme after you've drinking enough of my bottles, that you know, the fruit forwardness of the Bordeaux blends, the soft sexiness tannins, the Cabernets that are chewy but not too big that you can't enjoy it on its own. So yeah, I mean, it's nice when you're small like us to be able to produce a product that's so consistent from year to year.
And again, you have the opportunity for focus too. You're doing between 500 and 700, am I right on that, cases?
No, between 300 and 500 cases.
Oh, so it's even smaller, wow.
Well, it started off at about, I'd say, 150 to 200 cases, and it's grown ever so slightly every year. And I put the cap of 500 knowing that I would never really achieve that because I didn't want to do that. And it was just, at a certain point, it's too much work. But last year we got pushed to that threshold because we took on a project with Andy Bechstoffer. So I can't really say much about it because we're sworn to secrecy. So
Andy who? I don't think I know who that he is.
And so I hit the 500 case limit last year. It's a self-imposed limit. I mean, even though we're small in our facility in Sacramento, I have space in Napa that I can store. I store wine too. So that's really not anything other than more of a self-imposed limit. I don't want to be doing that because then I'd have to start getting distribution, then I have to start doing this, and it starts to get to be work.
Then it becomes real.
The work, yeah.
Well, so you're selling exclusively through your website and through any kind of a wine club?
Absolutely. Our wine club takes about 80% of our sales, the rest go website, and then, I guess, like I said earlier, a good portion. So maybe it's not 80%. A good portion goes to donations and charities and such, so we give a lot. I'll never forget, a few years back, my CPA goes, Stuart, you're going to have to start selling more, or stop giving away so much wine. And I go, well, it's just, that's my business model and it works for me.
Yeah, I think that's a thing. There's an incredible generosity in the wine business. In fact, we're here for Premier Napa Valley this week, and you'll also be at Premier and you'll be pouring at some of the events. That takes your time. That's not income, that's promotion.
It is, and it's a busy week. And of all of the auctions we do for Napa Valley vintners, this is probably the smallest donation, because Auction Napa Valley takes 10 cases of our wine, which is a lot of wine to
donate.
That's a
lot of wine
for a case production of 500 or less. So this is only 5 case donation, but this one we all try as winemakers to make our best of our best. I mean, this is where 200 winemakers meet, Premier Napa Valley, 200 winemakers meet together at the Culinary Institute and present the best barrel of wine we have in our cellar, or that's supposedly the task. So over the last few years, it's been fun because it's always a cab fest to me. I mean, people always try to bring cab because cab is king in Napa. But me being kind of like to push things a little bit, so I've always tried to do something a little different. And I think I've reached that. I did the first Oakville Malbec a couple years back.
I think I remember that.
Yeah.
Because I was surprised to see a Malbec. That's right. I think that's actually where I first learned about you.
Probably so.
Yeah.
And it was a 2012 Malbec, and I hope you don't mind me saying this, but it was one of those silly things that it sold to a wine shop down in San Diego for about $300 a bottle, and they sold it for about $400 a bottle. So I can honestly say I have the most expensive Malbec sold in California. Now, I didn't get a dime of that, and I'm not quite thrilled about, people paying that much for a Malbec, but it is kind of nice to know that I made it, and people bought it. So.
Well, there's a lot of pride. It's your wine. That's your name. It's not Joe Schmo. It's, it's Bodo. That makes a big difference.
Yeah. And then the year after that, I did a combination of two cabs from the Oakville Appellation. I called it East Meets West, and it was because ours was the west side of Highway 29 in the Tocolone, and it was on the east side of 29. I bought some fruit from Ash Vineyards that was just to die for. The fruit was amazing, and blending them together, mine are silky smooth tannins. The Ash cab had a little bit larger tannins. Put them together, it was just a scrumptious Cabernet. And East Meets West, it's always fun to have a catchy name. It did well. It went to a country club in Texas, but last year we made a wine called Intentionally Unintentional. And it was a blend of Cab Franc and Malbec.
Oh, wow.
Half and half.
Yeah. That had to be cool.
Well, it was so cool in that people are expecting, I don't know what they're expecting. They don't, obviously those, my tagline on it was it's an intentional blend of two unintentional varietals. And, you know, I don't think people have ever tried a Cab Franc Malbec blend like that. So it kind of opened some eyes. And at the end of the show, they always pick the local newspaper, pick their top 10. That one got picked as the second or third in the show. So to me, to be able to make a wine that holds up to Cabernet, or maybe it was they were so tired of Cabernet. I don't know. But it was fun to know that some people liked it. But this year I'm conforming. I'm doing a 15 cab, and I had a custom made barrel in cognac made for this vintage, and it was just, the wine is awesome. My only concern about these wines, they're so young. I mean, 15 cab in the barrel right now is still, it's like a pre-teenager. I mean, it's not even mature. And yes, the fruit's big, but you're not getting the subtle oak tannins in it. You're not getting the balance of the fruit and the oak. But it's big enough, I think it's going to hold its own. And most of the people that come to this are wine professionals, so they know that the potential for these wines. So
this is a very discerning crowd.
It is. So it's going to be fun. I mean, it'll be my first experiment of conforming and doing a cab, but we'll see.
Well, we'll keep an eye on it and see how you do it. It'd be kind of fun in the end. Do you think you'll ever end up doing any whites at all?
In my cellar, I have at any given time either a white or a Pinot. And last year I did a Viognier, and it was absolutely stunning. It was from Spring Mountain, the fruit. And, you know, to me, Chardonnay sells because it's like one of the top wine people. It's got a name recognition, and people like Chardonnays, Pinots, Cabs. But you know, Viognier, a lot of people can't pronounce it, and so it's a hard. If you look at it, the way it's spelled, it is kind of an interesting spelling. But the point being is that it's a beautiful wine, and this one, the wine I made in 2015, I call it summer in a bottle, because when you open this wine, you smell peach, apricot, pear. And amazingly enough, those flavors not only wash across through your nose, the flavors hit your taste buds, and you go, it's summer in a bottle. It's like you're going out to your trees and picking a fresh apricot or a fresh peach. It's a beautiful wine.
Well, that kind of goes to the idea of terroir, the idea of, you know, when you taste that wine, what it reminds you of, what you're thinking. There's a lot going on in a bottle of wine.
Oh, absolutely. So to answer your question, occasionally I'll do a white or a Pinot every other year, and I don't advertise them. I don't really sell them on my website. I sell them in my tasting room only, and we like to do a lot of wine dinners. I mean, for me, one of the most fun things we do, besides share our wines with folks around here and the events and such, we love wine dinners. And for us to go out and I love working with a chef to create the flavors that pair so eloquently with my wines. And you know, when you sit down with a chef and I explain the nuances of my wine and the flavors, and then he expresses, tastes things from a different level, saying, well, yes, the minerality of this will be worked with a winter vegetable that I can bring this. And it's just that next gap. It's that next step. And it's just so fun to see how they pair a food to it that just make the wine pop even more so.
They know what they're doing. And that's such a big deal because, you know, ideally wine and food, that's the whole deal.
Yeah.
Ideally. Although some of us are quite happy having it all on our own.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, we're out of Pinot right now, and what we made into one in 16, so we have a little Pinot coming later. But our whites and our Pinots are kind of a secondary thing, just so we can fill out the gap. And when we do tastings at our facility, it's always nice to have a few other wines to wet your whistle with.
Yeah, you got to have a little fun every now and then.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Stuart, for our listeners who would like to learn a little bit more about you online, how would they do that?
Our website has kind of our background story. It has a little bit about, you know, my daughter and I making the wine. So they can go to spotowines.com and take a look at it. And it's not a very, there's not a lot of information there, but it's enough to kind of fill in the gaps that we may have left out today.
To come to your tasting room, do they need to make an appointment then, I'm assuming?
Yeah, because you just don't want to show up, because we could be in our pajamas or...
Well, that makes it that much more fun, you know, bunny slippers, come on.
You know, it's what's fun about our winery is when people come there, they don't know what to expect. And they drive into this residential neighborhood, they pull up and they knock on the door, and it's almost like they're in France or Italy when they, you know, they welcome into their home and they take them down into the cellar and they open their family wines. And that's the feel I want people to walk away with. And I think we've done a pretty good job at doing that because, like I said earlier, when I get people there, it's they stay for 3-4 hours. So it's really a lot of fun to share that with them. I mean, and so, yes, if people want to come see us, yes, it's 70 miles out of Napa. It's in Sacramento. Is it worth the drive? I'd say yes, because it's something unique. It's something you don't walk into a wine tasting room that costs tens of millions of dollars and see this beautiful sculptures. You see a family wine.
Well, your key word is sharing. And I appreciate your sharing your time and being here for us in Napa from Sacramento. So thanks very much for being
Thank
here.
You so much. I really appreciate talking with you today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Learn more by visiting spodowines.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2017.